I want to thank you all for coming. Wow, what a pleasure it is to be here. You know, it's been 30 years since I was in this city. I can say that I didn't see very much of it. Doug had asked me, he said, would you like to stay a little while and see the city after you give your talk? And I said, if this were June, I'd take you up on it in a minute. I don't have the clothing, you know, in Tucson it doesn't get that cold. Doug mentioned, I'm a medical intuitive. So the universe played this cosmic joke on me a long time ago, nearly 20 years ago now, and I spontaneously began to see inside the body. This was long before anyone had ever heard of Carolyn Mace or Norm Shealy. There was no such term as medical intuitive. But spirits played a lot of interesting tricks on me, so I thought, okay, this is just one more. But ever since that time, it was a life transformation for me. And I decided that it's really interesting, this world of healing and new kind of medicine that's coming out. Ever since then, I read, I'm probably on the internet every night until 11 or 11:30. I was pleased to find a recent study that had been done on nutrition and heart problems that has been really a worldwide study. And they started off in France, seeing how much fat was in the diet of the French people. And they found out it was relatively little. And so, as a result, you can understand their rate of heart problems is much less than Americans or British. And then they went to China. By contrast, the Chinese eat so much fat, and in fact, nearly everything is cooked in a big wok of fat. Yet they had less in the way of heart problems than Americans and Brits. Then they thought about what people drank. So they were looking at Japan and seeing how much red wine they drank. Well, as you can imagine, Japanese have very little red wine. Their heart problems were less. Then they went to Italy just to have a big contrast. And they said, okay, you know, here we have a population that drink red wine all day long. And yet, the incidence of heart conditions was way down. So the conclusion of this study was, hey, eat whatever you want. Drink whatever you want. It's speaking English that's going to kill you. So tonight we're going to cover a lot of different subjects. I'm either going to put you to sleep or keep you awake to see where I am. I have been teaching and giving seminars around the world for nearly 20 years because of one goal, and that is to expand consciousness. With the subjects I'm going to be talking about tonight, some of them are going to resonate with you, others you're going to say, that lady is crazy. But it doesn't matter. It's where I'm at right now. And all I ask you is to be as open as you can, because we are enculturated in our beliefs. And we want to let a lot of those walls down over the next few years, because we are on a timeline. We don't have a lot of time before major changes are coming. And we can talk about that during the question and answer period. I want to give you a little bit of my background before we get into some other subjects. And we're going to start off with the idea that I have a sister who is 10 years older than I, and she always used to say, we never thought you were going to make it. You were so ill as a child. You were in and out of hospitals. Every time we turned around, you were ill again. And I'm sure some of you can relate to that as I go on with this. We're passing a handout now that's about the prophecies. Please don't read it now. In the middle of winter in Minnesota, I used to get out of my warm bed, and I'd sit in the windowsill, and I'd look up at the stars, and I'd say, God, take me back to where I belong. I don't feel comfortable in this body. How many of you felt like that when you were growing up? You can relate to that, a lot of you. I'm at the wrong place, right? And I also had a younger sister, and from the day she was born, she's 2 years younger, she just felt like my daughter. I just loved taking care of her, except in the evening. When we went to bed at night, we shared a double bed, and I had the absolute ability to terrorize this child. It was because all my friends in spirit were floating around the room, so I would join them. So her first sentences were, she'd scream to my parents in the living room, Naughty Nancy on the wall. Naughty Nancy gonna fall. Because I was always up near the ceiling hanging out with my friends. And, you know, she remembers this day seeing my body up there. What I want to mention to you is that every child sees spirits. We're going to be talking a little bit more about this. But it is their world. And it's only when they start into school that ability again changes, because we don't emphasize it. When I was going down the Amazon River, I met children who could see the wonderful spirits, the divas from all the plant life. They were great. All of that, those people believe in that, so they can see it. It's when we get older and people say, that doesn't exist, you're just imagining that, that we turn it off. When I teach seminars on how to see the electromagnetic field or the aura of the body, the younger people are, the more often they say, oh, is that what an aura is? I've seen that all my life. And so they're still close enough to it to be able to see. When I was 5 years old, we moved to a beautiful house in the suburbs. And what I liked best about this house was that there were two windows on either side of the sofa in the living room. And the windows were about 14 inches off the floor. So I could sit there and look out at the park and see nature and feel wonderful. So summertime, there was beautiful sunshine, and then it started lightly raining. The window was open the whole way. I had just gone to get my doll dress, put it in the sink, got it soaking wet. For my birthday, I had been given a little miniature iron. It was, you know, the original kind of irons where you don't have a dial on how hot you want it. So the longer you plugged it in, the hotter it got. So I came out with my doll dress on a little towel, and my iron was already hot. And so I started ironing, and all of a sudden jumped as high as I've ever jumped, because this thunderclap just shook me out of my skin. And when I looked up, this bolt of lightning was coming right through the window at me and went straight into my chest. And as I was going over backwards, I saw it go through the living room, through the dining room, and my father had just made a screened-in porch on the house, and it seemed to make a U-turn when it got to the screened-in porch. Well, I don't know how long it was until I sat up. And when I did, I was shocked, because this iron was no longer anywhere near the doll dress or the towel. It had gone full length on my father's new hardwood floor, and there's a big scorch mark. So I called my mom, and I said, Mom, something terrible happened. And she was so disappointed in me. She said, Nancy, you've been so responsible. How could this happen? And I said, Mom, I don't know, but it might be worse. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, come on. I took her by the hand, took her out into the porch. And sure enough, right around the corner was an electrical outlet with this big scorch mark. So when my father came home from work, he had to show him his hardwood floor. And then we took him out to the porch and showed him what happened to the wall. And the first thing he did was grab the fan and plug it in. And of course, it had fried the electrical. So that was my first incidence of having an interesting encounter with nature. I want to know how many people in here, has anyone else been struck by lightning? Okay. Has anyone else had, we've all had little electrical shocks. Has anyone had a major encounter with electricity? Okay. The reason I'm asking you that is several years ago, they did a study of the top psychic people in the world. People like Uri Geller, people like Jack Schwartz of Holland, and really interviewed them about what had happened in their lifetime. And what they found was they all had one thing in common. They had all been struck by lightning. Somehow it seems to rewire something up here. I had a friend that I dated for about 5 years, and he was the epitome of a man's man. Loved hunting, killing those deers and bears and wearing their skins and, you know, not bear skins, but a leather jacket. Fishing and lifting weights. And one day he was riding his bicycle out in the farmlands in Wisconsin. Beautiful day, and all of a sudden again the sky opens up, all of this rain comes down. So he went under a tree. No electricity, no lightning or anything. He's holding on to the metal part of the handlebar. Lightning comes down the tree. He said he weighed about 300 pounds at the time, and he remembers going horizontally across the ground, looking through his 2 feet like this. And from that moment on, he was a totally different person. Couldn't fathom the idea of hunting or fishing or lifting weights. He started reading books on everything he could on the subjects that you and I are interested in. It's just interesting that somehow this seems to change us. Now, I want to skip to the age of 17, and at that point, a couple of cars full of teenagers had gone to a state park in Florida, and in the middle of this park was a big river, and in the middle of the river there was a very large dock. You know, this kind of dock that has these oil drums that are filled with air that float the dock. It was anchored in the center, but it could tilt every way. I've always said I only swim for survival. All the kids were out on the dock for over an hour, and they kept saying, come on, Nancy, you can make it. We know you can make it. Well, I had been having dreams of drowning for as long as I could remember. I had never gone out there before, and I had no intentions, but finally said, come on, you can do it. So I looked up river, and I figured if I came in here, the current would take me down. As I'm swimming out, I would meet the dock. So I headed in, and I started doing my famous side stroke until I was exhausted. And then I looked around, and I was straight out in the middle of the river, no closer to that dock than I had been originally. And I thought, I'm in trouble. I don't think I have energy to make it that way. So I said, God, you know, if I'm supposed to make it, let me make it. So I'm swimming along, and finally I'm just about to the dock, and all the kids fool around and they are pushing each other on the other side. The dock flips up, I go under, and when it comes down, it is smashed right on my head. And then the kids are jumping around, and it's keeping me down. There's no way I can breathe. There's nothing I can do. So, next thing I know, I am 12 or 14 feet up in the air, looking. I can see my body down there. The dock is no hindrance at all. But I was fascinated by the kids, seeing their emotions and what they were laughing about and what they're happy about. Time went on, and you know, those of you who had an NDE know that there is no attachment to that body. It's the most amazing thing. You really don't care. People who have NDEs and want to come back, it's normally because of responsibilities. They have little children or something like that. But if there isn't that need, you don't care. My boyfriend happened to be the oldest one in the crowd. As luck would have it, he had been a lifeguard. So all of a sudden he's looking around and he doesn't see my head anywhere. And he thought, uh-oh. So he dove in the water and started looking around. Finally saw my body trapped under the dock. Went back up, got air, told the kids that he was going to be bringing my body up. And went down, got my body, and they all helped bring me up. They did artificial respirator, he did something on me. And then all of a sudden, this most excruciating pain that I could ever imagine in my life happened to me. And I was back in the body. The only thing that I remember about the incident was that we promised that we would never, ever speak about it to anyone, because our parents wouldn't let us go there anymore if we did. Well, my thinking was, now, that's finished. I will never have another nightmare. But that wasn't true. The nightmares continued with regularity. And perhaps 20 years later, I was in meditation, and all of a sudden I found myself about the same age, a young girl on a beach in the Pacific, as a native girl with darker skin, long black hair, and I'd been sleeping on the beach. And there was like a rumble in my chest, a vibration. And I thought, what's that? I'd never felt this before. And it seemed like that noise, that rumble was getting louder. And finally, I looked over my shoulder. The big wave was coming. And I thought, no sense to run. I can't outrun that. I may as well stay where I am. So I put my head back down. And the next thing you know, I'm out. Again, watching that body. I see the wave and then watch that backwash as the body is tumbled and jumbled and scraped across the bottom. And then I was free. And I never had that dream again after that. So we're going to talk a little bit later about parallel lives. But I wanted to bring this up for a particular point. I had the extreme good fortune back in the early 90s of studying with the top Russian psychic medical doctors who were also psychic healers. You may not know this, but in Russia, in addition to 8 years of med school, they can take 2 additional years of psychic energy healing. And they have to pass with 85% proficiency in order to have that title after their name. Well, I can tell you, back that many years ago, they were so advanced from what we are today. We saw films that were just amazing. For example, one film showed the assassination of world leaders. Now, I'm going to interrupt that story to tell you that many years ago, I was watching television, and there was a plane coming in, not like these jumbo jets we have today, but it looked like an area, now I don't remember where it was, but like Los Angeles, where you come in over the water, and the engines were on fire, the back end of the plane cracked off, and people were falling down into the water. And I could see the spirits going out of the body as the physical bodies were falling down. I remembered when I was at this point of writing an outline for this talk that my sister in Texas had sent me an email, and she said, turn on Oprah because she's going to have Spirituality 101. So I flipped on the television at that moment I was writing this. This man is saying, and I was on this plane that caught fire, and I could see the people that were sitting by the wings. I was in the back section. And he said, it was amazing. I see. And he said, sometimes the lights were huge and bright. Sometimes they were small and darker. And then the plane broke off and we fell into the ocean and I was saved. It wasn't until years later I realized I was seeing the spirits exit the body. Now I'll get back to my Russian video. When we looked at these assassinated leaders, up to about 1 minute before the incident that took their lives, you could see the spirit go out of the body. This is important because oftentimes we have loved ones who may have cancer or some other illness, and you hear the people moaning in pain. And what I want you to understand is that the body never, this physical body experiences the pain, but when the pain is too much, spirit leaves. And so we tend to feel, or at least a lot of people do, you know, I had this past life where I was run through with a sword or whatever it happens to be. I don't put as much validity into that any longer because I have seen firsthand that the spirit is out. And so I don't know how that fits in with your beliefs, but it's rather interesting to me. Now, I want to take a couple of minutes here. We're going to, first of all, talk about babies. When babies come into the physical life, they are so much more spirit than they are physical. They have to learn to develop the five senses we use here. Actually, the sense of hearing is the first to begin to develop in utero. So when I see a newborn, like my grandson, who just stares at a person, to me they're honing in on a voice because they heard it in utero. Their eyes aren't developed enough to really see, so they hone in, is the best way I can say it, to a voice that's familiar or sometimes a voice that they don't recognize at all. We have to learn when we come into this physical life to see with physical eyes, to hear with physical ears. And as I mentioned, all children see into spirit. And this is really important for us to understand. It is not imaginary, like when I was 4 years old and my mother said, you've got to stop speaking to your imaginary friend. And I didn't really know what she meant, but I looked around for the next couple of days and saw none of the older people that I saw ever communicated with their entourage. Every one of you came in with your entourage tonight. These spirits are always around you, and they're always caring for you. So what happened with me is I thought, this is a part of growing up, and that really appealed. And so from that moment on, I communicated telepathically with all my spirits. And I had a best friend in spirit. Her name was Mary. And what was great about her is we never fought. Like my physical girlfriends, we never got into an argument. And she grew along with me. As I got taller, she got taller. As I got older, she got older. So this happens to us when we allow that ability to happen. Now, before I go further, I want to give you four definitions so that we're kind of all on the same page. And the reason I decided to include this is the very first group I ever started myself, I had 50 people in the audience, and we got to questions and answers, and I said, anybody have a question? And the first person said, yes, what's the difference between spirit and soul? And we have a nun sitting over here, and she could probably explain that a lot better than I. Let me tell you, she struggled as much with that definition as I did. So I want to give you a metaphor. Imagine that there's this beautiful blue sky and this enormous white cloud. And about 10 minutes later, you walk by the window and you look up and you see this cloud is breaking into all little pieces. And that's what happens with your group soul. You break into little pieces so that you can have many experiences in life. I firmly believe that as we go through our many, many experiences, then the Creator becomes greater because of that. So, do you have one soulmate? No. You have lots of soulmates. Is your soulmate only the opposite sex? No. You have soulmates of both genders. I happen to have a phone call about 10 days ago. A woman called up for an appointment. She came in. I said, sit down. We sat down and looked at each other and we giggled for 5 minutes. We absolutely remembered each other. We didn't look the same, but our vibration was the same. That's how you recognize a soulmate. Your vibrations are absolutely the same as they were the last time you were together. And there's no getting to know you, period. You just absolutely know them. So it's really fun. This woman lives in a different city. I don't know how often I'll ever see her, but it's great to know that there's another soulmate. I have soulmates in a lot of countries around the world. The next thing I want to talk about spirit is spirit. There was probably the original quantum physicist. His name is Edwin Schrödinger. He was born and died in Austria. And he said, and rightly so, the number of spirits in the world is one. We, as a world population, have one spirit. Now the difference is, we talk about higher self. All heard people talking about my higher self. All of you have one higher self. And this higher self exists on these higher planes. And you seldom are in close contact with that higher self. But let's take for an example, your soul decides it wants to incarnate on planet Earth. And so when this request goes out, higher self says, okay, this is what you are going to have to learn in this lifetime. These are the lessons that are going to have to or should be experienced. So because of this, we're going to give you this person for your mom, this person for your dad, these people for your siblings or whomever. And let's say, Nancy, you're going to be born in San Francisco. You're going to check out here in Charleston. So I'm giving you this map, and you can go the northern route, the southern route, or across the middle of the states. This is your free will. But along the way, you have to learn those lessons. Now we're going to come back to this a little bit later because it's important. For that reason, we normally have a beginning point and an exit point. However, there are people that are granted extensions. And to me, the perfect example of that is Mother Teresa. She died 3 times that I know of and was supposed to go on. But she was doing such incredible work with humanity that she was granted an extension. Now I know a couple of other people who are not Mother Teresa by any means, and they have been granted extensions. So that does happen. Okay, the last definition I want to give you is something called an aspect of yourself or a fragment of yourself. To me, this happens, let's say you're 23 years old, you get fired from your first job. Well, if you haven't learned the lessons that you were supposed to learn during that period, a part of you breaks off, fragments off from this basic self, and it continues on that path until the lessons are learned. If you decide in your 30s you're going to get divorced, and you haven't learned those lessons, a part of you is going to continue on in that path. As I see spirits, it seems to me that during the first part of our life, we have all these fragments going, you know, not only on this planet, but other planets, and having all these experiments and experiences. And then as we get older, we start integrating all of these lessons into who we are. So to me, we have less of these fragments running around. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about situations regarding death, because to me there are as many different reasons for death as there are people. But I just want to tell you about two. I had a friend back in Wisconsin whose husband and she belonged to a curling club. And one night they were out with their group, and this one man seemed to kind of stumble and fell forward and they on the ice, and they kind of all waited for him to get up. He wasn't getting up, so they went over to him and very gently started to turn him over. And his face was already turning blue. They checked his pulse, no pulse beat. Checked his respiration, no respiration. And he had died that quickly. About 2 weeks later, this girlfriend called me up and she said, you know, his wife is really sorry now that she didn't have an autopsy because she's so bewildered on what could have been the cause of death. But at the time she was in such shock, it was just get the service over with because I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle my life. Well, when I caught up with this man, I said, could you clarify why you died? Kind of his eyes rolled back in his head and he said, well, that afternoon I had gone to the dentist. And I can't remember now whether it was, you know, a partial or some dental plate that he had. When he kind of tripped on the ice, his tongue pushed that appliance back in his throat and cut off his windpipe. And so he was gone like that. And I said, so I have one more question, please. Do you have any knowledge of why something like that would have happened to you at that age? And then he laughed and he said, you know, anybody who knows me has heard me say, I will never be one of these people that lingers on with cancer for 7 years or has Alzheimer's for 10 years. He said, just get me out of here. And that's exactly what happened. Again, it was kind of his choice of how to get out of here. But I want to tell you the most poignant story to this day. And that is just after I started in with this healing work, a mother drove about 2 hours with her 6-year-old son. He had just started first grade. 2 weeks into the school year, he fell on the playground and broke his leg. So a school nurse called her at her office and said, could you please meet us at the hospital because we have to have Neil's leg set. He broke his leg at school. So she drives to the hospital and she waits, thinking, how could it take so long to mend a broken bone or put a plaster cast on it? Finally, the sad-faced doctor came out and he said, I'm sorry, we had to amputate Neil's leg. And of course she was furious. She said, How could you do something like that without even asking me first? And he said, it's worse. He's got cancer in every bone in his body. Somehow she had heard of me and had driven all the way to see if there was some possibility that he could have a healing. Well, from that day on, I drove up to see Neil. And one of the things we did was teach him when he got into such excruciating pain. And I want you to remember this to teach young people. We had him swim with the dolphins. And sometimes I'd be reading him a book, and all of a sudden I'd see him just starting to undulate his body. And then I knew I could close the book and go home, because when he was finished with that, he would be so relaxed, he would be asleep. The second thing I taught him was, I said, Neil, when the moment comes, you will absolutely know it. And I want you to reach your arms up to the angels, and they are going to carry you up to heaven and Jesus. About 2 months after that, grandmother is cradling this now tiny body of this boy because it had atrophied so much without the bone structure. He had not been able to move in about 4 days. And so she feels moved to sing his favorite song to him. She's singing, Jesus Loves Me. And all of a sudden he gets this faint smile on his face, lifts his arms up, and he's gone. The next day, I got a call from his mom. And she said, Nancy, you've only known us for 3 months, but you knew Neil better than anybody. I would like to ask you to deliver his eulogy. I've never delivered a eulogy in my life, but I said, of course I will. I sit down at the computer that night, and all of a sudden I hear, hi, how's it going? Look down, and here's this little towhead standing next to me. And I said, hi, why are you here? He said, I'm going to tell you what to say. And he dictated. He had two older brothers, 8 and 10. He told them what their talents were that they came in with, what subjects they needed to study in school, and what they were going to be doing in business. He told his mother, father, and grandmother why they were in his life and what they were going to be doing. Well, we had over 100 people in the audience, and there was not a dry eye by the time we got finished. It's amazing what little ones can do and what spirits can do when you get open to them. I just think it's time to try to listen. They are always speaking to you, so why not try to listen? The next thing I want to talk about is, let's see what happens when we cross over. We've gone from the moment of death, now we're going to see what happens when we get to the other side. I know that with NDEs, there is normally a reception committee that is there to meet you. The reception committee is absolutely whom you expect. If you're an Eskimo, you're going to only see Eskimos. If you're a Zulu, you will see Zulus. So I remember this one young man telling me when he crossed over, Mother Mary was there, because that's whom he expected to see. But when you have a crossing over of a more permanent kind, this experience is not as common. What is much more common is that you fall asleep in the physical realm and you are asleep in the spirit realm. Okay? So it takes time to wake up in this spiritual realm for a couple of reasons. Perhaps the most important thing, if you don't remember anything else I say tonight, this is really critical. When you cross over, you are the exact same person you are here, except you don't have quite all this density to you. And the reason I want to point this out is I just spoke to a dear friend of mine before I came here. He is about 80, I suppose, and he said, oh, I can't wait to get out of this physical body and be healthy. And I listened. And he said, and drop this personality so I'm not worried about having enough money to see me through my retirement and all. And I said, no, Paul, it's not like that at all. Any illness you have in this body right now, you carry with you. Idiosyncrasies, worries, fears, doubts are just as much a part of you there as they are here. And that can be a shock. So that's why I say, you know, we should start working on this now. So then the next thing I'm going to talk about is my mother, who passed about 2 years ago. And I was out of the country when she made her transition in Florida. And I was back home for a couple of days. And pretty soon there's Mom in the kitchen, you know, just like we used to do, talking about different things. And then after about 3 days, she said, I have to leave now. And I said, oh, really? Where are you going? And she said, well, it's a kind of a rest home where I have to recuperate my body, regenerate my body. And that wasn't the first time I had heard that. I know that the longer you've had something in the physical, the longer it's going to take you to rejuvenate in spirit. I want to tell you something that is a medical intuitive thing. By the age of 21, you have only 3% of your original DNA left. So stop blaming your mother for breast cancer, your father for heart attacks. It is you that's responsible for the problems that you have. Because your body, when you get to be an adult, is made up of thoughts, emotions, that affect a body called an etheric body, and then it comes to the physical. So for my mother, the transition to rebuild her body or rejuvenate her body was not as difficult because of the fact that she died of old age. So she just had to youth herself, where someone like a woman I know had a withered arm since childhood. And so when she got to the other side and this rest area, people would say to her, spirits would say to her, do you want to get up and look around? And she'd say, oh no, I have such pain in my arm. And, you know, after a long period, they say a long period of space because there is no time there. After this space, people kept saying, would you like to do this? And she said, no, no. And finally, you know, they say, look, both your arms are the same length. They're the same width. You can do whatever you want. And she could still only see herself with that defect. So that's much harder to recover from than something like having a heart attack and being out of here. Because that's a sudden thing, and you can look at why that happened. How many of you have ever seen pictures of spirits? Actual, like spirit photography? Has anyone seen that? Quite a few of you. You know that they normally look much younger because they have gone through this youthing process. I think the first spirit pictures I ever saw were a group of men and they had no ears, which, you know, me wouldn't know because I have my ears covered. But with the men, no earlobes because you don't need it. All communication is telepathic. Let me tell you a little bit about these recovery stations. You know, I'm so trying to think of a German word where you go to these, like a spa to recover. Anybody know the word? But it's, you know, after you've had a heart attack or something like that, you go to this place and they rebuild your body. But it's true that you go to a place, and if you're a Buddhist, you're going to see Buddhists. If you're a Hindu, you're going to see Hindu. If you're a Catholic, the place will have priests and nuns that are taking care of you. If you are just let's say a more open type person, you will have doctors and nurses if that's what your realm of thinking is. And these people really are there out of the goodness of their heart. They could be on to higher levels, but they choose to be there. You are in a space that has light, that is so healing and nurturing. You have this pastoral view that is so restful, and there's no hurry. Some people stay asleep forever, not forever, but for decades, and sometimes even for centuries. Because if they feel they have done something so terrible, they just go back to sleep again. And people who have committed atrocities or don't believe in an afterlife, they can just wander. They wander and wander and wander until they get to a point of saying, if there is a God, please help me. In that instance, they will be helped and they will get out of this negativity. My father, when he crossed over, which was much sooner, he was a man who was really interested in everything from nature to building furniture to making jewelry for us as children. And he once built a European cathedral pipe organ in our basement and rocked the neighborhood. And so when I got to talking to him one time, I said, do you sing in the choir here? Because this was early on and I hadn't done much visiting there. He just kind of smiled and he gestured up to these trees and the trees made the most lovely harmonic sound. And then we walked along and there were some little flowers and they just, with his loving look at them, made kind of a bell-like sound that was lovely. And then I said, well, do you go to church? And he said, look at this. And above us, these trees just formed like a cathedral ceiling over us. And he said, what you have to understand is any place you go here is God's place. Every place is a sanctuary. And it is pretty amazing how healing that is. We are going to look at next. I want to ask you about how many of you felt different from your families when you were growing up. Did some of you feel like, yeah, a lot of you. I asked Spirit about that quite a few years ago. I said, you know, why does this happen? And Spirit said, if we put you in a family where you were totally like everyone else, you would have fallen asleep to your purpose. So we made you different enough that you kind of kept looking, wanting to find out, where do I belong? What am I supposed to be doing here? And I want to ask another question. How many of you have changed jobs or careers within the past 3 years? Again, a lot of you. How many of you are considering changing in the next 2 years? And that takes care of just about everybody in the audience, right? To me, the trouble is what you're going to be doing, for the most part, hasn't been created yet. And if you think that's a problem for you, I feel so sorry for the kids, because they know that everything they're learning at school is useless. You know, the statistics that came out 2 weeks ago said that by the time a girl starts her junior year, or boy, junior year of university, everything they learned in their freshman year is already obsolete. So I see more and more wonderfully dedicated mothers around the world homeschooling so that they can gear what the children are learning to what they need to learn. In fact, I have even advised parents to let their teenager drop out of school because they knew exactly why they were here and exactly what they were going to be doing in the future. They were on a mission, and there was no reason to hold them back and keep them from starting on that. To me, a part of the NDE that impacts us most is the life review. I want to take just a minute first to say, you've got to become aware of what you're thinking at all times. I'm talking about when you're putting dishes in the dishwasher, when you're mowing the lawn, when you're driving the car. Become aware of those thoughts, because they're the ones that are going to really hold you down. If you think, one of my teenagers is, or my grandchildren for sure, is going to get in with the wrong crowd, they're going to start whatever, you are going to attract that to them as quickly as you can imagine. You cannot afford to do that. You have to know that each child came in on their own mission, and they are going to be doing incredible things here. They have to go through their lessons in a couple of years. I used to say 5 years. Now it's so much faster than that they have to get on the other side of things that you and I could take 50 years to understand. So let's get back to this life review. When you cross over at this final stage, it is very much different than an NDE life review. In the first place, again, you don't have to do it so quickly. You can take your time. Now we're going to get back to, remember I told you your higher self presents you with this map. When you have rebuilt your strength in your body and you're ready to look at your life review, this higher being comes and this time gives you two maps. This is the map you looked at before you came into the physical life. This is what you actually did with your life. And you compare the two. You will find that there are certain areas along the way that are highlighted. And these are going to be the things that you have to look at. They can be the most innocent of things. To me, it's the little things that become very big. There's a man who is right now in Arizona. He was born in South Africa. Had a little friend. They lived in the middle of nowhere. And this little girlfriend was the same age as he was. One day they got in a bad fight. They didn't have real toys. This was like 150 years ago. Where, you know, Dad made the wagon out of wood and had this funny little handle, and Grandma sewed the doll and put button eyes. So this was her doll, and it was the dearest thing to her in the whole world. And after this argument, or in the middle of it, her mother called her to come up to the house. And the little boy was so mad, he took her doll and threw it in this creek. That night, the mother called his mother and said, "Does Jack know where Melissa's doll is?" And she came in and he said, "No, he didn't have any idea." In that life review, he got to see the dearest thing that she loved had been taken away from her. And so she never trusted love after that. And in her 20s, she started drinking. And by her early 30s, she had died as an alcoholic. So you have to experience these repercussions of some little quick action that you did and didn't think beyond what was going to happen. So as you go through each one of these highlighted experiences, you get to follow the story, and you get to see it from a 360-degree perspective instead of out of your own eyes of anger or frustration or whatever it might be. You feel extremely alone during this period of time, but you go through the points also where you succeeded. When you get finished with that, then you go into what I have heard people who've had an NDE experience, where you see now all of your life is happening in a circle around you, going from death back to birth. And this time you feel the pain that you caused everyone else. So let's say some kids are fooling around, and because of it, one kid who is drunk driving, it gets, and then you have to feel all of their family's pain as well. And so you would think this would be much more devastating, but it isn't, because you have this incredibly loving being around you that just lets you know they are unconditional love. Everything is a lesson, and it adds to your growth. So nothing is too terrible that you cannot overcome it. One of the things is that you have helpers also that are helping every single minute that you want to ask questions and say, well, how should I have done it? What would be a better way to have handled this experience? So it really helps you go forward. One quick thing I want to say is that you are free to travel on the other side. Caveat, I was traveling one time to a place that was so bright, and in it there were three beings working on a project. They were so bright, the project was so bright, I couldn't even see what it was. And you know, here we always talk about getting more light into us, getting more light in our food. And so I thought, oh wow, this is incredible. But within a short time, I realized that the longer I stayed in the space, the more my light was diminishing. And it lets you know that there are planes and levels that you're not ready to go there yet. And so you have to wait until it's the right time. And certainly after you've done these two life reviews, you are free to join your group. And your group is made up of the people that have been your real family all of these lifetimes. They are at all different levels, but they are so loving and so caring that it doesn't matter what level you're at. You're just totally a part of them. And since I was 5, I was teacher healer. And so my group is teacher healer. It's so exciting that I don't have to die to this physical body to meet them, because I already am surrounded by them. But if you think, well, how do I find out what my group is? To me, the best way would be to go back to about the age of between 4 and 8. Over the next couple of days, think about this. I have people who tell me, I can't remember my childhood at all. Well, your subconscious remembers every detail of the color of the dress your first grade teacher wore. So it's all there. But think about, during this time period, what did you love to do that when you did it, you lost all track of time? And that's what really will help you understand what you're supposed to be doing. Now, I just want to finish up with this idea that we are at the most amazing time of transformation that has ever, ever happened on Earth. What I mean by that is, in 1992, we started into a phase called planetary human, or global human, because in that year we had the internet, we had cell phone communications in every country of the world, and we had worldwide television broadcasts. As we get to October 28th, 2011, not that far away, we are complete with that learning experience. And we are moving to galactic human. Never before has this been on Earth. Native Americans tell us that we're walking between the worlds, because we're not completely in one anymore, and we're not yet in the other. So it is a time of tremendous stress. What is it going to mean to us to move into this galactic level? Several things. One is, I mentioned that the senses that the baby has to learn, the physical senses, we have to learn the suprasensory abilities, like clairvoyance, clairaudience, intuition, telepathy. When, back in 1987, I began to hear the sounds, tones of my body, just like scientists know, every chakra is a different color and has a different tone. Your organs and glands are all different colors, so they are different tones. So each one of you have an orchestra sound that is all your own. And in this book, Earth and Ascension, I talk about how humans will be transforming. And there will come a time when we will walk down the street and other people will see all of our lights and hear our song. I want to ask you if you've ever had this experience. You're standing in line at the supermarket checkout line, or you're standing in line at the bank, and a mom comes in carrying a little baby in her arms, and this baby's looking all around, and all of a sudden the baby looks at you and can't get her eyes off of you. It is because you look like a Christmas tree compared to everybody else. Have you all had that experience?
Yeah.
So just know that, you know, this is absolutely an unbiased opinion that's coming from this little one telling you how great you are. Now, the other big thing that's going to happen is in our Western society, the left brain is going to be tremendously diminished. We don't have to perk up the right brain. It's right where it should be. It has just been so overshadowed by the left brain that it has to come way down. And as it does, we will stop being analytical, critical. We will stop being material-minded. We will be so much more caring and understanding of all of the people of the world. We will feel like one family. And we will be in harmony with nature again. The handout that you received is letting you know that this is not just one Mayan calendar that's telling us these changes are going to happen. It's not just some new age hype. These are all indigenous tribes from around the world. They all know that these incredible changes are coming. What I want to tell you is that in the past, we had to die to get to that space. And right now, that space is coming to us. You are going to be beings of light living on a planet of light. You are the future of Earth, and I thank you for coming.